In November of 2023, the Swell Pod took a 10-day journey across 5 states, traveling 3,580 miles with one challenge in mind.
And that challenge was to interview 100 pleasantly rebellious humans to uncover deep truths about what it takes to create something that has never existed before, challenge the status quo, maybe even change the world.
This is the Kiln Road Trip, created and produced by The Swell Pod.
In partnership with Kiln, Moterra Camper Vans, and sponsored by Taurus.
I'm Spencer McEwen.
And I'm Josh Taylor, and together we're the co-hosts of The Swell Pod and your guides on the Kiln Road Trip. Follow along on the journey.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast, follow The Swell Pod on social media, and subscribe to your YouTube channel at, you guessed it, The Swell Pod.
This is interview 35 of the Kiln Road Trip, and today we're at Kiln Provo talking with Bentley Wilson. Bentley is the founder of Cartograph, an intelligent product road mapping tool that stays up to date automatically and predicts capacity and delivery timelines. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. We hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Swell Pod, Bentley.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Do you want to just kind of kick us off by, you know, introducing to our listeners who you are?
Yeah,
you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so my name is Bentley Wilson. I'm one of the founders of Cartograph, which Cartograph is an enterprise B2B SaaS company. What we do, without saving you the complicated jargon, we essentially do product road mapping for software companies.
Yeah.
Now, our unique take is essentially that when you build a product roadmap at a software company, right? I just got off a customer call, actually. He put it this way. He said, as soon as we build a product roadmap, it's all lies, right? Mm-hmm. And so they set their timelines and they say, we want to deliver this then. And as soon as they kind of set that in place, work with their engineers and everybody, sales, it's all out of date. It's all wrong. They probably have to change a bunch of it. They have, you know, other things that come up. So what we've done, our unique thing is that we've integrated with tools like Jira or Azure DevOps, these kind of engineering tools. We pull specific data out of there to try to forecast engineering timelines, essentially forecast product delivery timelines. And so we take, you know, we provide a road mapping interface. We put a bunch of data behind it. So it's not this arbitrary, I think we can deliver it here. You know, it's based on what do we actually have room for? What, you know, what have we shown we can deliver in the past? You know, we can kind of expect that to keep happening. And so we're trying to, you know, really innovate on top of the product roadmap and provide enterprises with the ability to kind of coordinate these big lifts that are hundreds of engineers into these simple timelines of what'll most likely happen and how can they plan against that. So hopefully that wasn't too complicated. But
so just more dynamic too. Can you just kind of, I guess, maybe provide like a use case or an example of how your product works in that situation?
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. So essentially what happens when a product team, they kind of work with their CTO and engineering and sales to figure out what they want to build, right? So it kind of starts with our priority list, right? We say, okay, here's the, I don't know, if we're doing annual planning, for example, right? So we could say, here's the, I don't know, the 8 things that we think is going to really move the needle next year for our product team. For our company. This is what will drive revenue. You know, our CEO set a goal as a company. We want to triple revenue next year or whatever, mm-hmm. right? So as a product team, here's the 8 things that we think, mm-hmm. working with sales, customer support, you know, engineering, that we've talked to everybody about, we've talked to customers, we think these things will help us triple revenue. So you do that, but then the issue that product teams have is that they go put it onto this Gantt chart interface, right, where they drag and they say, want to deliver these by Q1 and these by Q2, right? It's based on nothing, right?
Yeah.
It's based, you know, engineers are like, yeah, I think they're doing
guessing,
best. Yeah, they're doing their best, right? They're trying to say, I think we can do this, but they're not remembering the 15 other things they're expected to be working on. And so we provide an interface to say, here's all the things that are taking up engineering capacity.
Got it.
Right? And we're forecasting that capacity out and saying it's going to take at least this much until this date and this date and this date. And so you have maybe 30% space, you know, during Q1 to fit new stuff because you already have. And so it allows product teams to say, okay, what do we actually have room for? What can we actually do, right? And engineers are freed up because they don't have to be on all these planning meetings, and they can also have their capacity communicated to product teams without having to be like, I think this is going to take a bit longer. And, you know, it's all this, I think. And we provide an interface for them to just see simply, here's what you got going on. Here's what you have space for. Here's when it'll probably get done. So hopefully that makes sense.
That's super helpful.
Yeah.
And would you say that your primary audience is a larger enterprise then?
Yeah, it generally has been, right? So we started the company, it'll be 5 years in March, which is absolutely crazy. I was 25 when we started it.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, and I did not think, very naively, I'd still be at it. I was like, we'll build this 3 years, we'll sell it, and it'll be good to go. You know, just so naive, right?
So easy.
I was 25, right out of school. I have a software engineering background, and I was like, oh, it'll be no big deal. We'll just build a cool little interface, and people will love it, and then one of the big players will buy us.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just getting started. We're just getting started. But we've learned along the way that it's really the bigger companies that gravitate towards the solution. They have such a hard time coordinating these big moving parts, right? Tons of different, you know, individual contributors, different teams, interdependency, small teams, you know, like a team of five engineers at a startup or something. They may be interested, but really it's like once you get 20, 30, 40, 50, right. hundreds, thousands of engineers, that's when it's impossible to figure this out. So, certainly it's okay. Bigger teams. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
What is your nearest then kind of competitor that's trying to do this?
It's a great question. For sure, there's like a budding startup group
like you.
that are trying to figure out how to apply data to roadmaps, right? Make roadmaps smarter.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in the validating new product sense, but in the predictability and timelines, right? Mm-hmm. Predictability is a common thing. A lot of product teams are trying to create more predictability, right? How can they create predictability so they can plan better? So there's a lot of startups in that predictability for product team space, and they're approaching it in different ways. Mm. And then you have kind of the incumbents. You have the bigger product roadmap tools, as well as Jira has their own product roadmap.
Yeah, with all their suite. Yeah,
yeah. So they're doing some things. To be frank, we feel pretty confident with a lot of the functionality that we're seeing pop up in in the industry. We feel pretty good about we always say the line in the sand that we've drawn versus the potential competition. But it's happening for sure. There's more and more in this predictability space, and
I'm interested. What was the impetus of this 5 years ago? Mm-hmm. Like, I imagine you probably pivoted along the way, or is this? Yeah, to help me understand, like, what started this, and then the evolution of to where you are now with the product.
Because we did interview
Spencer, one of my co-founders, Jack,
and it probably definitely was a different product.
Yeah.
And so,
I'm sure it was.
Tell us
the
journey.
Yeah. It depends on when that was, right? It could have been one of many products, really, we joke about this because there's definitely this positioning side, right? That's, I would call it one of the hardest things for founders to do is to position something, right? So we've tried, we're always testing everything. Like, if you really looked at our LinkedIn, all our posts for the last 5 years, you'd be like, execution management and operational analytics and
polling, a lot of polls to test that out.
Exactly.
I'm impressed by that though. I think that shows that you are basically willing to pivot
and
listen to your customers.
Well, we have no ego around it, right? Yeah. It's like, I don't care if you think I don't know what I'm doing because I said something different. You know,
just want to find the right
thing. What resonates, really, right? And it's funny because we're kind of coming back around to saying, well, at the end of the day, we have a Gantt chart in our tool. We have a visual that's basically a calendar with capacity charts on it. And so we are really at our core, we're a road mapping tool. Yeah. We've hesitated to call it that because we don't necessarily always have all the road mapping functionality that your standard incumbent road maps have. But at the end of the day, that's what we are. We're really our roadmap, just with a different set of features. The impetus, like you asked, actually it was 5 years ago. We didn't start the company till March of 2019. But when we were kind of ideating, my early career, I was at BYU for school, computer science major. Mm-hmm. I was a self-taught kind of web dev in high school. Mm. And so I had some jobs. I worked for like Young Living and a few other kind of random.
Tribe? No, was it?
A bunch of random ones. But just doing some simple front end dev work. That's kind of how I got my start and learned. And I served a mission after that, kind of had a bunch of clients and projects and had a few internships, and just this theme of like estimating a project and giving that to business stakeholders, and they would communicate it to a customer and it was always wrong. And I was on teams where this was a huge issue, and I helped to manage where this was an issue. And I kind of said, this has got to be a problem that software can solve, my first jump off point before I ever met my co-founders or anything was Jira is the worst interface ever. And I actually don't, right? I need to stop because we want to be good partners with Atlassian. And I do like Jira. But at the time it was just like, man, it's Jira. That's the problem. Or it's our dev tools, right? They don't communicate, they're good interfaces, but they don't communicate where we're at in the project well. And so I said, well, let's build a different project management tool that takes a focus on timelines and progress bars and forecasting. And you know, I'll save you the whole 5-year story. It'll take another 5 years to tell it. But but the long story short is that, you know, people love their tools. It's hard to get them to adopt new tools when they're already embedded with some. And but the data was still there, right? And we said, well, that's really the problem we care about solving, not making a better project management tool. We really just want to solve the forecasting timelines and working with business stakeholders problem. And so, yeah, definitely two, I would say two major pivots, right? We pivoted away from the actual tool where you could check off tasks to more of an analytics dashboard. And we had competition in that space. It wasn't really solving the problem, actually, right? It was more like, you know, here's how fast your devs are moving and here's how many lines of code they write. And it wasn't like helping figure out, you know, predictability, solving the forecasting problem. So we pivoted one more time away from that to this tool. It's a tool. It's not actually a dashboard, but it's a tool that helps you to kind of plan your roadmap, but with the data. So anyway,
With the current positioning, are you finding, you know, significantly more traction than what you've seen with other instances of your positioning?
Certainly. Absolutely. Yeah. We've come a long way, right? So we, you know, I always say as a founding team, we were like, you know, junior devs, junior salesmen, junior marketers, junior everything, like just barely had any, just had scraped our teeth, you know, cut our teeth on all these different things. And now I would say we could all hold our own on any team now, you know, just with how much you learn in such a short period doing a startup. And so, you know, with our current positioning, we feel, you know, I should always be careful, learn to be careful, right, in this journey. But yeah, we feel very confident in our positioning now. And I think the reason for that is just you kind of learn that there are, you know, your ICP, talking about your ICP and saying, who really cares about the problem? Who really cares about the solution? You know, what do they look like? What are all their characteristics? And so we feel confident in that. We feel confident we, when we come across the person that has all, checks all these boxes as far as our ICP goes, you know, we think we're going to win those deals almost every time. And so as long as they check the boxes that we've identified, you know, I could place some bets and feel pretty confident that we'd win those deals. There's something else that I think is really interesting that's helped us to gain confidence. It's called the Maya principle. And I actually just learned the name of this thing, but it's something we've been talking about for now a year and a half or something, where I have a tendency to just innovate as much as possible, right? Like, I want to just
try something new.
I want to build a teleportation device where people just wanted a car, right? That's kind of been my MO a little bit. And so I've learned this Maya principle, I guess is it's called. The idea is that you can basically, you need to do about 50% familiarity and 50% innovation, right? If you want to innovate and improve upon something, it's got to be at least halfway familiar to an existing workflow. And then you can kind of innovate and push the envelope about halfway.
That makes sense.
And so, you know, we initially were like, we're going to completely ask you to completely change your entire workflow and do something totally different, right? And now we've kind of said, okay, there's features here that really are important that are existing and things that they can grasp onto that they want to continue doing. But then there's things, ways we can push the envelope on those things and make them better and innovate with data and some of that. So that's been part of the reason why we're confident in our current positioning and we've seen more traction is we learned not only, you know, how to talk about the problems with the right people, but also how much innovation is too much innovation and how much innovation is good and helpful. So anyway, that's kind of where we've gotten to.
You seem like, I can't remember very well our other conversation, but you specifically seem like you're just soaking up as much knowledge as you possibly can along the way as well. And you're like hungry for it.
Yeah.
It seems, at least that's the way it seems.
It seems like, you love to learn.
For sure.
Period. I think that's part of the innovation part. Like, let's get something out there and just see what happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know.
No, I think that's true. I think it's true. You know, and I, a lot of my, it's funny, you know, 5 years ago as an immature, naive kid, I a lot of my persona, I think, was wrapped in it up in this like tough upbringing, you know, like I can run through brick. I used to say that like in my own head all the time, I can run through brick walls. This is nothing. Like I can do a startup, like I can whatever. And this experience has kicked me in the butt so much and so hard and so often that it's like been the ultimate humbling experience. It's been the ultimate learning experience. It's I still for sure have a chip on my shoulder, but it's like the healthy kind, you know, not this like out for blood with every interaction type kind.
Yeah.
It's a little intense, but it's definitely just just said, you know what, like this is hard. You know, this is way hard. Like for sure, everyone goes through super tough things, but this is to choose to go through something like this and what you guys are doing, like you're going on this journey. And and I'm like, man, like I'm thinking, I'm like, you know, every day is hard in a startup, but I'm like, God, that sounds hard. Like that's gonna be fun, but it's gonna be really hard.
Yeah.
And so just choosing to do things like this, I think it's super humbling. It puts you in the best position to learn and advance quickly. And so, yeah, I think you're right. You know, I've been so fortunate to somehow still be doing this. Like, you know, we should have died definitely at least four times, but probably like once a month, you know.
I like the persistence.
Yeah. And so, and we're still, you know, nothing's set in stone at all for us, but we've seen enough to know there's a real opportunity here, and we're gonna keep at it. So anyway,
100%.
Before we get into the rest of the episode, we want to thank the partners and sponsors who made the Kiln Road Trip possible. The Kiln Road Trip is brought to you by Kiln. Kiln is a boutique co-working and flex office community with 13 locations in 6 states across the West, dedicated to providing innovative workspaces that empower your team to thrive. Whether you're a solo visionary or an enterprise-level team of up to 100, Kiln transcends being merely a place to work. It's a hub for learning and connecting with like-minded professionals that will make you and your team love where you work.
And if you haven't stepped foot inside a kiln yet, you really need to. On this road trip, we visited every single location, and trust us when we say, once you see these beautifully designed spaces, meet the talented team, and connect with fellow members, you won't want to work anywhere else.
Locations include Utah, Colorado, Idaho, Oregon, California, and Arizona. And they're growing too, with multiple locations set to open in 2024.
Yeah, so be sure to check out the Kiln locations nearest you by booking a tour at kiln.com and answer Swell in the question, how did you hear about us? Once you complete the tour, you'll be entered into a competition where you could win a 1-year membership, their club membership at Kiln.
Yep, you heard that. That's kiln.com. Book a tour and be sure to mention Swell in the question, how did you hear about us?
The Kiln Road Trip is also brought to you by Motera Campervans, a luxury campervan rental company for iconic road trips. Their top-of-the-line vans are available at 7 locations located near America's best outdoor adventure destinations. They have consistently earned the highest customer ratings in the industry, making Motera Campervans your gateway to adventure without sacrificing on comfort or service.
That's true, and initially we wanted to take this journey in a 1960s VW bus, but thankfully we found Motera instead. With 3 van options, we took the Pop Top Classic, which sleeps 4 and is best for those who want to maximize floor space and storage. This was critical for us because it needed to sleep the entire crew, we needed space to edit, and we were traveling with large amounts of equipment, luggage, and, you know, other goodies that we picked up along the way.
And this van took us through all 3,580 miles of the trip, super comfortable and sweet to drive.
And actually, Motera offers fully planned itineraries if you'd rather leave the planning to someone else.
Visit gomotera.com/swell. That's gomotera.com/swell.
This episode is also brought to you by Taurus. Taurus is leading the charge in home energy storage. Taurus makes it easy to achieve energy independence and a greener tomorrow. The Taurus Station provides everything you need to generate clean power, efficiently store electricity, and easily manage your energy use.
And installing a Taurus Station offers plenty of benefits, including save money on your electricity bill.
Also, ensure energy security with backup power during outages.
Reduce carbon emissions with renewables.
You can also automate EV charging and HVAC systems with 100% renewables.
And enjoy unrivaled system monitoring and support.
If you like the sound of those benefits, get a quote to build your Taurus station in less than 30 seconds. Super easy at Taurus.co. That's Taurus.co. Now, let's get back to the episode.
And I think you guys have found a good spot.
You know, one of our very first interviews was with about resiliency.
But
anyway, the point is that throwing yourself in there, although you didn't realize how hard it was going to be, just doing that is going to give you that the strength for when you really do need it, you know, next week and the week after, right?
Yeah.
And in the future. I was going to just one, probably a question I probably shouldn't now ask.
No,
But before that last question, you also tend to ask.
We have three more questions.
Yeah. So just briefly though. So for the Marty Kagans of the world.
Yeah.
And you mentioned innovation as well. Like, there is a view that, you know, predictability is great, mm-hmm. but predicting, we don't want to be predictable churning out
feature factory
rubbish, yeah, as we say, right, in England.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, feature factories. Uh-huh. I mean, there is a massive mm-hmm. amount of waste in the system, mm-hmm. like millions of dollars in big corporates, just by being a feature factory and being predictable doing yeah. that. How do you caveat that? And is there anything in your pipeline, or sorry, not pipeline, but roadmap, if you will, that addresses innovation at some point?
Certainly, yeah. So, you know, it's a constant theme for us to say, you know, we, like you just said, you know, we want to push the envelope by about 50%, but we want to be familiar by about 50%, yeah. you know. And so, yeah, we talk about it all the time. We actually right now, what's next for us is this. So right now what you can do inside Cartograph is we pull in all this engineering data. We tell you what's currently happening. We let you plan new things, right, within Cartograph and kind of get an idea for how hard, you know, how long they'll take, essentially, yeah. based on your historical data. So you can say, this is about the size of these other five projects. It's a medium size for us based on all our data. And Cartograph says that'll take this long if we put this much capacity towards it, right? And so it's a way to get pretty close. But what we want to do and what we're adding more of is the ability to kind of even go a step earlier than that. Say, we're not ready to plan something or put it on the roadmap or even say we're gonna build it, right? We might not even build it. Yeah. So we're adding more functionality to be able to say, here's a lot of ideas that we think will move the ball forward. And what we're being asked for more and more by customers is to be able to assign dollar values, right? To be able to, because product teams are meeting with their sales teams and saying, what, you know, if we were to do this thing, what do you think that's worth? How many of your potential buyers right now would buy something like that? Or how many existing customers that you're managing, how many would buy this thing? And so they're wanting to put more dollar values to these ideas, these early plans. And so that's kind of where we're headed, to be able to say those things. And then as you move into delivery and predicting, delivery, you're able to see, okay, we're thinking that this much value is going to come from this in-flight thing. Maybe you need to pause something because you have something else that's a higher priority. And you can say, well, we could pause this thing based on it's the lowest value thing, right? And we all agree that it's the thing that's going to have the lowest revenue impact. And so doing more of that is really where we're heading. But I just want to say too, with predictability, it's not about saying we want to predictably ship more stuff, right? It's about saying the things that are going to drive value, we want to be able to coordinate and understand when we're going to be able to get that value to market, right? So that's what matters. It's not about saying we ship something new every Thursday or once a quarter or whatever it is.
It's value.
It's about the value that we are validating, discovering with customers.
Measuring,
You know, iterating on with customers. How can we predictably, reliably deliver that value to customers in a way that they can expect it, in a way marketing can know when to start their marketing campaign and sales can know when to start committing to customers that it's going to be ready, and et cetera, et cetera. Customer support can say, yep, we have a solution for that thing that you're asking about and it's coming out in 2 weeks or whatever. Yeah. It's that we're trying to help people get better at.
That's great. Well, we've run out of time here, but you used to be a Kiln member. You were in Kiln the other day. You're in Kiln now being interviewed. What do you think of Kiln? Why?
Oh my gosh.
What do you like and why have you used it?
Yeah, over the years? Huge fan of Kiln. I had a friend who has a exploding business right now ask what I thought of Kiln like just a few weeks ago, and he's at WeWork, and I was like, oh, well, I was like, like WeWork is like a, it reminds me of like a laboratory that's like been like perfectly cleansed and, you know, is like this like sterile environment, right?
Yeah, it's cold.
Yeah, it's cold, exactly. Yeah, it's not this like warm, you know, you feel like you could, frankly, it's really not, I'm not an investor in Kiln here, but you feel like you can be productive in Kiln, honestly.
Yeah.
I really feel that way. And no, we're early adopters of Kiln. We're big proponents of Kiln. One of our guys right now has a membership still. I was just talking to the team about, I live here in Provo, so I was thinking about, I was like, man, we should just get a space here in Provo. And we love Kiln. It's awesome.
But once you've been at Kiln, you can keep coming back, right?
Yeah.
And that's why that's why it's been really great.
I was just talking to, I think he's the GM or something, Gibson Smiley.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys know him. But I've known him for years now, and I saw him for the first time in maybe a year last week here.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can't get rid of me. I'm like, yeah, I'll always be. Now we're like, let's build the company to exit at Kiln. That'd be cool, you know?
That would be cool.
So we like Kiln a lot. It's an awesome place.
That's great. Well, that's last fantastic. Killer question.
Yeah.
Answer?
Last question.
Yeah, sure.
Last question. We ask it to everybody.
Okay.
What does it take to take an idea and create something that never existed before, create a movement? It's interesting because I think your Maya principle kind of touches on that, but
you've already answered it in many ways. Probably
answered it, but yeah, I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Yeah,
What does it take to take an idea, to create something from nothing?
Yeah.
Create something that's never existed
before. That's never existed before. Yeah. Honestly, the gut reaction, first thing that came to my head was everything. It is extremely hard to do. And it'll ask everything of you. Yeah. And I think for me, like if I could go back and talk to my 25-year-old self starting this, I would tell myself that. I'd say it's going to ask everything of you. So be prepared. Be prepared to know what you're willing to give for it and what you're not willing to give for it. Because it'll ask for everything. Mm. And so it's kind of up to you to decide what you're willing to give it. Right. Mm. And for sure, there's some things you can sacrifice that'll make it go faster, but probably in the long run are not worth giving it. And then there are things that you think are a priority that are not, that you can sacrifice to the cause and it's worth doing. So, you know, in my experience, it'll ask everything and it takes anything you're willing to give it. Yeah. And so
love it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you guys. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. And good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Kiln Road Trip. Be sure to follow along on the rest of the journey. And you can do that in two ways. One, subscribe to the podcast, whether you're listening on Apple, Spotify, or maybe even watching on YouTube. And follow along on all of our social media platforms, whether you're on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or TikTok, @TheSwellPod. Thanks again, and we'll see you in the next episode.